Scotty. Yeah. I dig it.
Yeah, man.
Cool. All right. And the new, well, let's just jump into it. I'm welcome to Glad You're Here. I am live with Joey Verscotti, the artist known as Verscotti. Are you based out of California now?
Yeah.
California.
I live in Los Angeles now. I've been there. September of this year will be 7 years.
Dang.
Which is crazy.
Born and raised in Minnesota, though?
Born and raised in Minnesota. I'm from New Ulm, Minnesota.
All right.
So it's like South Central Minnesota. I was born in New Ulm, and then I went to Gustavus Adolphus in St. Peter for one semester. I had a really cool music scholarship there, which is why I ultimately decided to go. But being from New Ulm, which is like a town of maybe 13,000 people, to then go to St. Peter, which is like 8,000 people, if I remember correctly, I realized very quickly, I was like, oh no, like I have to go to a bigger place. Like, and I got the music scholarship, and I'm giving you a lot of information here, but I had that music scholarship that made me want to go there. But like, I had already been, like recording, producing, writing, releasing music with my high school band. We were called Polis, and we were kind of like an experimental rock band that we actually did like Warped Tour my senior year of high school. And we were doing it. Like, so I had already started to like figure out kind of like the business side of, you know, like booking shows and booking tours and like, you know, just like playing the, like we were doing like MySpace and Facebook at the
yeah.
Like, we started on MySpace, but like, I had a lot of connections in Minneapolis, and namely my very good friend Isaac Burkhart, who used to have a studio in this very complex, and he's in Nashville now. But Isaac produced my high school band's EP.
Sick.
And so when I was at Gustavus, I was going up to Minneapolis like every weekend. I just like wasn't spending any time at Gustavus, and I loved like the teachers and everything, so no knocks on Gustavus if there's any Gusties listening to this, but I just needed to get to Minneapolis and be in the bigger market, and so I was accepted to the U of M in my senior year, but I chose Gustavus, and so I had to reapply.
Oh.
And that was mid-year, so yeah. It was like, it was so stressful, but I got accepted, and I got like all the housing that I wanted and everything. So then second semester of my freshman year, in the cold, dead January of 2011, I moved to Minneapolis, and like I knew like one person.
That's awesome. So, you gotta do it though.
And it was the best thing, because now, you know, Minneapolis then became my when I'm in LA and people ask like, where are you from? I say Minneapolis, and it's like that very much became home to me. And I very much cut my teeth as an artist here, because when I moved to Minneapolis then and that was 2011, I left that band Polis. That was my high school band. And that was a very difficult decision, but ultimately I knew I had to, you know, get to a bigger market and keep exploring. And that's when I became Verscotti. That's when I started the solo thing in 2011, and we made an EP, and then we were just talking about this before we went live. So our connection today is Krista Valinsky.
Shouts out to
Krista, Elephants and Flowers Media. In 2011, I recorded a 5-song EP with Isaac and my good friend Ian Allison, who's a bass player in Minneapolis. Shouts out to Ian. He and his band, Down and Above, had done some work with Tinderbox Music. And so Krista at the time was with Tinderbox, but she also had a publishing company and a record label with another guy, Grant Flesland. Shouts out to Grant Flesland. The two of them did a lot of licensing. And so my friend Ian, who played bass on that initial EP, was like, hey, I think this stuff could work really well on TV and for licensing and like commercial stuff. And he's like, you should send it to Krista and Grant. And so I sent it to them, and Krista got back to me so fast.
Yeah.
And she was so enthusiastic. And like, she's truly someone that her and Grant, Flesland, like they really were some of my earliest adopters and supporters, where they were like, I actually went back and found my first email from Krista recently, that had me on the floor because I was just like, it was like, so, you know, like being seen by someone. And it was like, I, you know, I took such a gamble of just like moving to Minneapolis felt so scary and intimidating. And then like recording this EP and not really understanding like, how am I going to like get this out there? Like, who's going to listen to it? And like, she got back with so much enthusiasm and optimism that I was just like, this is very, like, it's possible, you know? And it's like, we only really need one person sometimes to do that. And so Krista and I have worked together since 2011. And I will say that EP, there was a 5-song EP, every single song on that EP got placed on multiple different TV shows.
That's
and so,
awesome.
And that really kind of, if it's okay, I'll just kind of keep going. Like, this is sort of the path.
Go ahead.
Basically that EP getting all that commercial success, then I hadn't known before that what like a PRO company was, or like ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. And when we got the placements, I remember Grant and Krista being like, what PRO society are you with? And I was like, what's a PRO society? and to those listening that maybe don't know, PRO is Performance Rights Organization, and they help collect our royalties and our back end, specifically publishing. So like writers and publishers shares of compositions. And so, but then I did some research real quick and scrapped together an ASCAP account, and I've been with ASCAP for, you know, 13 years and counting. And now I actually, I'm friends and have some contacts over there at the Los Angeles office. And so shouts out to ASCAP. And, but really that began my fascination with, music and film and music and commercial and music and like motion media, if you will. And so I was at school at the U of M, and I was a I was still a music major actually, but then I decided to switch my major to study advertising. And I was thinking because there's no like music business program at the U. And I was like, okay, advertising, promotion, marketing, like, you know, like marketing myself and like using social media. And so I decided to get in the School of Journalism at the U of M, and then I joined Ad Club. And when I joined Ad Club, I went to this presentation where there was a copywriter and dude that had, he worked at Cole McVoy, an ad agency in Minneapolis. And he was breaking down a Subaru campaign that they had just worked on. And he, in passing, was like, the music was done by a local music house called Egg Music. And then he just kept going. And of course, my ears perked up, and I was like, a music house?
Yeah.
What is that? I need to go there. And so I approached this dude. His name was Darren afterwards. And I was like, hey, you said something about a music house. I was like, what? And he's just like, yeah, like Egg Music. They're in downtown Minneapolis. And I was like, here in Minneapolis? He's like, yeah, man. He's like, they make music for film and TV. I had never heard anything about this. So I literally got on Metro Transit. I hopped on a bus straight after Ad Club, again, dead of winter. I had my EP in my briefcase.
Yeah.
And I went down to Egg Music and I knocked on the door.
That's awesome.
They were like in the middle of a, you know, work day, and the owner of the company, this dude, Eric Fawcett, he was so sweet with me, but he was like, listen, he's like, I would love to talk to you, but he's like, we're in a meeting right now. I'm like, okay, sorry, you know, I'm like 21 and just so eager. And so I ended up getting an intern position at Egg Music, and then they there was a job one day where I think one of the composers was out sick or something, or it was like the job was unexpected, and it was the first thing they had me work on. And I did like a track for, I think it was like a Tommy Hilfiger commercial. Nice. And so, but then they started kind of, and they were really happy with, you know, like how I did on that job. And then they kind of started giving me more opportunities. And eventually, as a sophomore in college, I got hired at Egg. And so then I became like a composer at this company. And so that really started to, up until that point, I had only ever worked really as like a songwriter and the artist with Isaac as my producer. But it was in that moment that I really started forcing myself to learn production.
Yeah.
And so then as a composer at this music house, I was, you know, every day was a different genre and a different assignment, and it was like, you know, it's like, okay, today it's a Target commercial and the reference is a Janelle Monáe song. So now I'm like having to interpret, like, okay, what kind of like drum sounds are those? Like, how do I come up with that bass tone? Like, what is the piano or what's the organ or what? And so, like, and then the next day is like a classical piece for a Windows commercial. Yeah. Or like, so then that really started to, you know, break open my, like the floodgates of exploring different genres and looking at things more from a producer mindset. And so that sort of shifted me into starting to produce my own stuff. And but all at that same time, I was at this exact studio where we are today working on what would be my first full-length album with Isaac, and that would become the album Lemon Heart. And that's just turned 10 last year, which is insane.
Dang.
But so all that to say, I was working at Egg for a while, and then I ended up leaving that company in like 2014, and because I was all the while I was recording my own music and putting it out and touring, and decided to go freelance with the composing, and started picking up work as a composer for different companies, and doing like work for hire stuff for different libraries, and eventually I started working with a manager here, this dude Nate Vernon. He is, and we no longer work together, but Nate, again, was someone that, you know, I talk about people that see you and make you feel seen. It was like Nate very much understood kind of like what I was working towards. And one thing that I said to him when we started working was like, I really do want to sign a publishing deal. Like, I'd love to get like a proper publishing deal for this album and like maybe, you know, a record deal. But just like something in the way of like finding a company that was signing me for my artist material and like for what I'm doing as a producer and songwriter. And we achieved that together, but that was what started pushing me out to Los Angeles was yeah. that when the album was done, and this is the album number 90, which was my second full length album, started taking meetings in LA. We were doing some stuff in New York. My wife and I were going to move to New York in like 2015, but her father got really sick, and thankfully he's still with us, but it was like a very, very stressful time with like cancer and stuff. And oh. so we stuck back because we're really close with our families. And but it ultimately ended up being like such a blessing in disguise, because like over that course of like 2014 to 2017, like so much of the work that was in New York, like it all went to LA. And it's like now it's like LA is like, and it always has been like music capital of the world, but it's like specifically when you look at like what was going on in New York, it's like so much of that is now just all happening in Los Angeles. And yeah. so, but so we started going out there more, and the company that I was talking with that showed the most interest right away was the one that I ended up signing with, and they're called Angry Mob Music, and they're out in Los Angeles, and they're an independent music publisher. Shouts out to Angry Mob. I've been signed to them since 2019. We got the nice. Deal done. And so, but yeah, my wife and I moved out to LA in 2017, in September of 2017. And a quick horror story for the listeners, and any musicians will feel this one in the gut. We had a Jeep, and we had a 5x8 U-Haul trailer, and we drove out to LA from Minneapolis. And on the first night of our trip, we stopped in Aurora, Colorado. We had a hotel booked there, and that was like a 12-hour drive, and stopped in Aurora. And overnight, someone stole our U-Haul trailer off the back of our Jeep in the hotel parking lot. So like, all of my gear, all of my instruments, all of our life. Of course I go to my gear first, but no, I mean like literally like our wedding rings were in there, because they're like, we had them in this like safe box because we were like moving and we didn't want to like be dinging up our rings and saying, you know, but and like no one's ever thinking like what if someone, you know, you would think, what if someone breaks into the trailer? It's not, what if someone takes the entire U-Haul trailer?
Exactly. So,
and it was so that part of moving to LA was like, we were already scared of moving to Los Angeles, you know, and like changing our entire life and moving somewhere where we, you know, talk about moving to Minneapolis and knowing one person and feeling scared when I'm like 20 years old, like I was 25 and we were, I mean, it was so intimidating to go out there, but then to have literally everything get taken. The only thing, we showed up there with three changes of clothes and my Juno synthesizer, because it didn't fit in the trailer. So literally we showed up with a Juno and three changes of clothes. And I was like, well, at least I've still got my Juno. But yeah, so that started a chain reaction of like, we were in a like multiple court cases then, because they started finding items of our stuff, but they were able to like, so basically, and this is just a little side tangent here, but I guess in that like four state area of Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona, it's like an epidemic of trailer theft. And they just like rip trailers off and move them across those four state lines.
Yeah.
And so there's like, so we were just a victim of something that has happened, because when the sheriff showed up to our hotel and, you know, cause we called it in and everything, he's like, you're lucky they didn't take the Jeep. He's like, typically they take the car.
No shit.
And so he, you know, it's like, oh, count yourself lucky. But then he was just like, yeah, just the other day there was like across the street in another hotel parking lot, this guy had a trailer that had like a NASCAR wrap on it. So like, and I think it used to be like a racing car, like trailer. Mm-hmm. It got stolen. And he's like, the thieves must've assumed there was a race car in there, right? But it was his life's work of archaeology and fossils.
Oh my God.
And they dumped him in like a pond. And so it's just like, can I swear on here?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Like just like shitty people being shitty, you know? And like just so, but that it framed our move in such a way where it was like, I already had so much determination to like figure out like, how am I going to make Los Angeles work?
Yep. Right.
And like, cause my wife at the time was, she was like a administrative person at like a really big high school in Minneapolis or in Woodbury. And so she was doing like administrative stuff there, but she left her job to like go out to LA and support me. And so it was like, I felt that pressure in a way too, where it was like, I have to figure this out. I already had that pressure, but then we got there with nothing. And it just like, it made it all feel so like truly like a survival mode.
Yeah.
Kind of mindset. And so, you know, that was such a wild way to get to Los Angeles. But then truly from that moment on until now, 7 years later, like everything has just continued to generally trend up.
That's good. And go away. That was the only way left for it to go.
Truly. Yeah. And yeah, what I say is like, the other than one of us like getting hurt in a car accident or something, it's like, it was basically the worst that it could have gone. Getting out there.
Brutal.
So, but no, LA has been great since. And I signed that publishing deal in 2019. So we were kind of like, you know, dating for like a year and a half, the publisher and I, and they started getting me really busy with session work. And I was doing a lot of work with like as a writer and producer for other artists, which that was very much part of moving to LA. I wanted to get more into the co-writing scene. And since then, man, I signed with them. And then, I won a couple like Danish Grammys a couple years ago. They're called the GAFA Awards in Denmark. And so I got to go over to, that was for my work on a project with this great artist, Lidmore. And I was a producer, writer, and I did some mixing on it. And she won, it was like best electronic album of the year and then best sounding electronic album of the year. And that kind of turned into this month-long Euro trip where I got to go over to Copenhagen, Sweden, Berlin, Hamburg, and then back up to Sweden, and then back to Copenhagen. And then we went home, and Franny was with me the whole trip. And I was just like doing sessions. And then I signed with a label, called Preach Records, and they're based in Los Angeles, but then they have a branch in Hamburg in Germany. And so that's why we ended up going to Hamburg, was because the co-founder and partner, this dude Dan, he and his wife live out there and run part of the company from Hamburg. And so we got to go there and have some meetings and sessions. And so yeah, it's been, I mean, being out in LA has, I've been able to travel a lot because of the pub deal. I've been in Toronto a lot and Nashville, and it's just been wild. And the new album, so the new album is called Shering, and that came out on Preach Records as well. And that's, it's been just so fun to watch all the reactions and to see, you know, people, you know, respond to it in such different ways. And it's like, there's a lot of heavy topics going on in it. And so it's like, I've just had like a lot of different people reaching out with like, you know, people that are like, I got sober because you've been so vulnerable about it online. And
that's
like,
awesome.
So like, and in that way, it's like, I think as artists, it's like all we can do is be as vulnerable as possible, because then, you know, it's like we're trying to like inspire others, right? And yeah. It's like, I think the only way we can do that is by just being as honest as possible. But it's like, that's what makes being an artist so scary.
Yes.
Right? Is like wearing your heart on your sleeve constantly.
And then people telling you they don't like your heart on your sleeve.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I wish you would have done it like this. Like, well, that's where I was at that time.
Yeah. So we get, I love the unsolicited advice on songs that are already out from random people that comment.
It's like, yeah, you should. It's like, yeah, well,
you know what you should do is you should turn that bass up just a couple of decibels.
It's online already, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you think that this is the demo that I'm sharing with you here?
This
is the final project.
Oh man. Oh, I know. But yeah, so I know I kind of just gave you a ton of information, but I wanted to kind of start from the top and get into it. Yeah,
I love it. You saved me. You saved me trying to uncover all that.
Appreciate
it.
Awesome.
But there's a lot in there, and one of the biggest things that I take away is that experience that you had working at the music house,
yeah,
where you were composing and you were doing all sorts of things, and you had to do it quick.
Yes,
from the sounds of it. And so
yes,
I imagine that's where you got your reps in. That's where you kind of you learned your skills and your trade and kind of what you were doing,
yep,
and how to, like you said, a Janelle Monáe song,
yeah,
replicate that within an eight hour workday.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So
deadlines are always impossible with that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But no, continue, sorry.
But no, I'm just saying, so you learned a lot, and it's one of those experiences not every musician gets to have, right?
Yes, of, no, for sure.
Of baptism by fire like that. Yep. So then you get all these tools in your toolbox, and you're like, yep, oh, I know how to replicate X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D, E, and F.
Yes.
And now I'm going to take all that and mold it into my own Verscotti sound,
yep,
and then I'm going to create my own music, yep, on top of this bed of knowledge that I now have.
And yes, and to go further, that... So, I mean, let's think about this. I was 21 when I got that job, 22, which is so young to get that experience and to get that opportunity. And the joke is always that we're like, when's the deadline? And it's like, the deadline's yesterday.
Yeah, right.
They needed it yesterday. And it's like, and it's such a like, you know, like dad joke. But it's so true, because it's like, it's always unrealistic. It's always, you know, they're like, we need like an entire like orchestra fake in a day, basically. It's like, good lord. But
every day you need to be George Martin,
truly. No, exactly. It's like, pull a miracle off, and we did, and we do, and that's like what we do as musicians. But no, it truly was like trial by fire, and it made me work fast and learn how to do quality work fast, and that has given me I don't know if it like feels like there's like a maybe a weird connotation to it, but it's like, it's definitely given me a competitive edge in Los Angeles
100%.
In terms of like, especially as a producer, when it's like, not only is the exposure to having to do such varied genres at a moment's notice, like that has allowed me where it's like any artist can come to my studio and I'll do the genre and I'll do it well, because it's like I've spent so much time like investigating sounds and understanding like the template that's behind something. And so like, when it comes to me as a producer in particular, I do every genre, bless you. I do every genre, and I can, you know, and it helps that I play a ton of instruments, right? So like, I can, you know, I can understand like how to build something from like a chordal standpoint just to like get us going. But then like, to be able to know, you know, how to pull together like, you know, a quick trap beat, or how to put together a country groove, or how to put together a EDM drop, or like, you know, it's like I've done it for companies that put so much pressure on you in such a short amount of time. And it's like, and in the production world too, for artists, it's like, it's sort of like the fastest person wins a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because they're like, artists are constantly in sessions, and so they're writing all these songs, and you know, they give you a scratch vocal or a demo vocal, and it's sort of like you as the producer need to then turn that into as close to a like finished version of something to get the artist excited, and you need to do it quick.
Yep.
And like that, and it's tough because it's like, as I say it, it's like as a, and in the producer community, it's like, it's really tough because every session we have, it's another track to finish, right? Whereas like if you're just a songwriter, it's like you can kind of like you write the song and dip.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that songwriters aren't, you know, stressed and working on all kinds of stuff. It's like they are. And a lot of songwriters I know too that I work with, they get very involved in like specifically the vocal process when it comes to like tracking, because they want to be there to. So there's that. But it's like with a producer in particular, there is like there's extra hours and there's extra time that goes on well beyond the actual session. And like there's so much pressure to like work fast and like give something that the artist and their team is going to be excited about so that we have the best chance of like getting a cut. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but that's like the commercial world set me up so well to be able to work in those stressful, unrealistic parameters, you know? And, but those, I want to park on the people at Egg for a minute too, because this is a, like a Minneapolis based like podcast. Like they, not only was like getting that experience so, you know, like rare and unique, the people that were working there then made it what it was. And I said earlier, Eric Fawcett, he's the CEO and owner, and actually just recently, and congrats to them because they wanted this. Egg actually sold their catalog to another company called Level 77. And,
oh, nice.
And that was something that Eric was working really hard to figure out, because they just built this huge catalog, and I think it kind of got to a point where they, I don't want to speak for him, but I think ultimately it was just like they wanted to be able to, you know, get it in the hands of someone that was still wanting to really like hit the ground running. And they had, I think they had ran that company for almost 10 years. And, but so they were able to sell the catalog, but, Eric Fawcett is, he's a drummer, and he's an artist in his own right. And he, was actually the drummer for this band Spy Mob. And Spy Mob became the band for NERD, for Pharrell's group, NERD. And so Fawcett was like Pharrell's drummer for years and years and years. And he has, just through that experience alone, he had so much wisdom and so many connections. And like, and he's just such a like caring, sweet guy. But he's also like such a good businessman, and he was so good at the business side of things. And I've always been so like fascinated with the business, and you know, even since like high school, I'm like booking all the shows and like getting our guarantees set and like promoting on MySpace and Facebook. And so I always had a, you know, a knack, and I have a knack for the business side, but he truly helped to really kind of shape too like the importance of fully understanding the business side. And then that's Krista and Grant, and Krista, formerly of Tinderbox and now Elephants and Flowers Media. Like those two were so good about making sure I understood, even just from like, you know, PRO. It's like that. Yeah. It's just like getting that stuff said is so important. And I think more than ever too, artists, musicians, songwriters, producers, mixers, wherever you are, it's like you need to understand the business side of what it is, like your specific niche in the industry, because it's just growing harder and harder to collect a significant amount of money for this, right? It's like in the digital era and the streaming era and the, you know, the era when labels are, you know, sorry to say it, but it's like labels are doing less and less for artists, and like artist development is kind of gone in the way of like they're just looking for things that are already tracking.
Yeah, labels are coming to you and being like, how many followers do you already have? How many listeners do you already have?
What have you built already?
Yeah.
And then we'll, so it's like, and I wrote a song with this guy in Nashville called State of the Art. And it's like the idea is what about the state of the art? It's like, and the first line of the song is they want to see the numbers before they hear the music. They want to know you're cool before they want to choose it. Yep. And it's like, it's so true. But all that to say, the business experience that I had from Egg, and then, you know, John Hermanson of Story Hill was the main composer. Brian Hanna, who is an incredible musician, instrumentalist, but also like he's just such a good mixing engineer. He was the head mixing guy, and so like I was learning like mixing trades from this guy that was, and they were all like in their 40s at that point, so it was like literally like double my age.
Yeah.
And they're just like taking this kid in that is so eager and, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and like ready to take over the world, and they're just like, they fostered me. And then Brack Herferth was the producer, and he now runs a company called Gregos Music, and he was the producer, and Brack was like my big brother there. And then Eric Applewick, who's of Vicious Vicious and Tapes and Tapes, Tropical Depression, like Eric was one of the composers, and he truly became like a mentor, and he and Johnny were like mentors in the sense of like, you know, how to every single day put a different hat on and compose something different and like keep a, you know, positive demeanor towards it. It gets so stressful. And, yeah. And then, yeah, so Egg was like, I think the older I get too, it's like, I realize how incredibly unique and rare that moment was. And it truly set me up in a way where I was like, you know, it gave me a big edge.
Huge edge.
Yes. Well,
and the other thing about that inside of all of that, and kind of what you mentioned, is like artists having to grow right now on their own without the record label's help, yeah, is you have to learn. And so when you learn in public, yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah.
Because there's an element of being an artist, being a producer, of when you start, imitation.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what else to do. So you kind of imitate because it's all that is around you. And you got to learn how to do that.
Yes.
Kind of in silence almost. No, you know?
Because my name wasn't on any of it. And
So then when you come out, you're basically a fully formed artist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When people are hearing your stuff for the first time.
And it gives me the it's like, so in the last 7 years since being in LA, well, honestly, by design, because I signed a publishing deal, I really can't do a ton of composing for other companies. I just like, I'm, my deal is exclusive with my publisher, and so I can do certain things with them, but it's my work has been way more focused on the writing and production for other artists and then my own artist project. But writing and producing for other artists, it allows me to, because I love pop music and I love country music and I love like rap, trap, hip hop, R&B. I love like neo soul, and that allows me to flex those creative muscles and like you said before, get my reps in. But it's like I get to like do that kind of music for other people, mm-hmm, and I think what can happen too is like, artists tend to like be like, oh, like I'm really into, like there might be a girl that's like really, really like strong as like a folk artist, right? But then she's like really into, let's just say like SZA,
yeah,
for like a month. But then she might feel like, oh, I need to make something like SZA.
Yep.
Whereas, and you know, it happens all the time, and it's like people need to explore, and I'm not saying that that's like a bad thing, but I think you might, years after, and I am speaking from experience here, like you might tend to kind of look back and be like, oh man, that was kind of just like an identity crisis, but it's like really where I belong is like this lane. But as a producer, I get to kind of get those, like, live vicariously through the artists, and it's like my voice doesn't work as a X, Y, or Z,
yeah,
but I get to at least create that world, and that is like 10 times as satisfying then, because then that artist's voice works so well with that specific sound, and then it's like you get to live vicariously through that project. So
yeah, you get to scratch those itches and those impulses without that's huge. I didn't even think of that perspective, but that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I didn't make you bring a guitar.
We
got a guitar for it.
I provided one. I'm in from LA, so I flew in with my electric guitar. And by the way, I had a show last night. So the album Shuring is out now, and it came out February 9th, and I had the album release show in LA that same night. But then what I'm doing this year is I'm doing like a, I'm just branding it as like album release shows in all the major markets. It's like fly-in dates for these tour dates. And so just last night, I had the Minneapolis album release show at Ice House, and it was just insane, man. I'm still processing it. My voice is like gone, so I apologize if I crack or can't get any notes out today when we're doing this. But I hadn't performed in Minneapolis for 7 years, and it was like a family reunion, my wedding reception 2.0, and just like so many people from the scene that I have not seen for so long. And throughout the night, I just kind of kept like seeing different people from stage, and I'm like still overwhelmed.
That's so cool.
And processing what the hell happened last night. But yeah, so the album's out now, and I think I'll just play a few songs.
Yeah, just take one, and then we'll take a break for sponsors, and then we'll chat a little more, and we'll do another one in a little while.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Take it away whenever you're ready.
I think I'll do, I'll start with the song Generation After Generation off the album. I'll do my best with my vocal in the condition it's in.
After generation, we don't need no invitation, but we seem to muck it up, 'cause we'll do anything for love. Once we hit that bottom line, it's way too low. Then you're on your own. That good alone, where you start to know your own unknown. Generation after generation, need emancipation in the Himalayas. They're teaching meditation, handing out the cosmic cure in one word. Let's kill the and joy on the other side. Oh, oh. In rooms, silent rooms, you'll find you. We'll make room in rooms.
That's a kick-ass song.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Oh, dude, we're gonna take a second. Thanks from sponsors, and we'll be back. And I'm gonna bug you about that a little
yep.
bit. All
right. Yep. Sounds good.
All right.
All right, it's time to thank our sponsors that make this show happen. Our number one sponsor, Car Concierge. Let me tell you a little bit about them, what they do, and how they can make your life easier, right? If you need to shop for a new car and you can't find the time, you know, and maybe those past experiences with shady dealerships and salespeople has made you want to avoid starting the search for that new vehicle altogether. Well, you should know that Car Concierge gets it, and that's why they exist. They're going to work directly with you to understand what you're looking for in your ideal vehicle, and then they take the search on for you. That's right. So it's going to save you endless amounts of time and questions by working with Car Concierge, because they're going to search, find, negotiate, and ultimately deliver your dream car directly to you without you having to step foot in a car dealership and waste your entire Saturday sitting right there while they go and play games in the back room and then come back to you, and it's still not even their best price, right? You know the games. So visit their website at gocarconcierge.com or call 612-662-7788 to get started today. All right, and tell them I sent you back to the interview with Joey Verscotti.
All right, I'm back with Joey Verscotti. What was the name of that one?
Generation After Generation.
Generation After Generation. Yes, that sir. That was a kick-ass song.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. You've got such a I don't know how to word this, but it's such an individual style. Huh. But you can like grab random influences at random times.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah,
then it's like, but this is something entirely new.
Cool, man.
You know, created here. I try not to blow smoke too much.
I'll take it. I'll take it. Thank you.
Yeah, man. So I got a question for you, because you probably have a unique perspective on this as like a musician, instrumentalist, producer. Like you're a multi-hyphenate Renaissance man.
Yeah. Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, exactly. You're probably influenced by a lot of different things. Like you probably are as influenced by, I hope I don't pick a producer like Jack Antonoff,
sure,
as you are by SZA. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
Like, how does that kind of go when you're creating stuff and you have all these influences to choose from?
Specifically for myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, thank you, by the way. That's all very flattering, and I don't take it lightly. And I do love Jack Antonoff, and I do love SZA. Honestly, there was a point in my career for the album Number 90, which is my second full-length album, where I really did kind of veer heavily from the path of like folk and rock and roll, which like Lemonheart, my first album, was very much like folk rock and roll, like inspired by like Wilco and Jack White, and the Beatles are kind of the like non-starter, like it's just always the Beatles underneath everything for me, and like Radiohead. But Number 90 was the album that I put out in 2019 that ultimately got me the publishing deal, but it was like very much like way more like heavily influenced by like production music, and that was kind of what was cool at the time. Like rock and roll had kind of faded out, and like indie rock too had kind of faded out around like 2015 and 2016, and like that's when like it was like way more electronic, and I kind of, against my own better judgment, and it was something that I don't want to say I regret, but it was just kind of like it just happened. I sort of lost myself as an artist in that process. And then especially when I started writing and producing for others so much in LA when I got out, I kind of started feeling like what I was doing for others in LA, which was mostly like R&B, pop, and like trap stuff, mm-hmm. I kind of started feeling like it was like that's what I needed to do as an artist. But then that led to a big rebirth and rediscovery that would become the album Shireen that I just put out, where what I realized is that like my voice and my specific artistry and identity, it's like it is in and of the like folk rock world.
Yeah.
And so when I'm considering all my influences and stuff, it's like I can't get away from certain things, right? And it's like you said, it's like it pokes in and out. But when I'm just sitting down and writing, it's like me at my ultimate, like purest form as an artist is like me with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
And that's where I approach everything. And it's like from there, I start building the production. But it's like I won't touch – I work in Ableton, so everything I do is in Ableton. And I won't open an Ableton session for anything until like it is written and I like have it completely ironed out, at least for my project, because it's like I know I can mess around in Ableton for hours and
you can get
hours.
In the weeds quick
and that's so fun, and there's definitely like points in time and like moments where it's just important to just do that and just mess around and have fun, right? And just like throw as much paint at the canvas as you can. And I do that all the time. But when I'm like, if I'm working on like a project, it's like, until I have like the basic form of it ready, I don't really want to start to get into like, you know, pedals and production and all these things. And so I know it's kind of a roundabout answer, but honestly, it's like I think I've learned the lesson the hard way in terms of in the artist sense, like staying true to who I am when it comes to my artist project, and then letting the other influences, like, because like Kanye is someone I'm, I like just keeps coming to my mind as I'm talking about this. It's like Kanye to me is like my ultimate favorite like producer and artist. But nothing, I mean, not my favorite artist. Like, my favorite artist is the Beatles and Wilco and Jack White. But, like, when it comes to, like, a modern artist that's, like, not of that, like, rock and roll world, it's, like, it's all Kanye for me. Yeah. And so, like, and I say this with a grain of salt, too, not considering just, like, how absolutely wild he's been lately. And it's, like, it's separating the art from the artist. It's, it's so I have to do that with him in particular because it's, like,
well, and we also, we can't pretend that he wasn't influential.
No, well, everything you hear today is like, it's so him, and he's, and it's like, I'm always checking credits for like is Kanye on? It's like, no, it's just, he created a genre within a genre, basically.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so it's, you know, it's like, I skate in and out of my influences, but like that song in particular, Generation, it's like, I hear the Beatles and Radiohead.
Yeah.
And like some Wilco as well.
For sure.
But yeah, man.
I dig it.
I'm glad you like that one. That's my personal favorite off the album.
Yeah, sure. it's a killer song. It is a killer album too, everybody.
Thanks, man.
Shuring, I'm glad you said that out loud because I would have pronounced it wrong.
Shuring.
Yeah. it is spelled Shiring. So when you're out there looking for it.
Yep, for Scotty Shuring.
That is what you're looking for.
Yes.
And yeah, it's such a good record, and it's so cool. And actually, those influences make sense for what I was hearing that I couldn't articulate.
Sure.
Because like that big sound to the record, similar to like Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, right? Or like Radiohead. It wasn't, I can't think of the more like In Rainbows Radiohead, sure, is what, sure, what I kind of got from
love
it.
Love that album.
But yeah, and it's not. But it's not on the nose with those things. Yeah. That's the thing. Those influences are like in the background.
Yeah, right.
They're there, but they're not. You're not like, oh, this is Radiohead, right? Like, I didn't pull that until you said those names.
Cool.
Okay, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I couldn't.
I just told on myself.
Yeah. But it's cool. It's cool to kind of put it together, and then it makes sense. And you're like, oh, it's like when this is gonna sound really dumb. You remember the FedEx thing where there's the arrow between the E and the X?
Yes.
And you don't see it, and then somebody points it out. And you're like, now I see it.
And you never unsee it. No. Yeah. That honestly, that is like bringing it back to my high school band when we were all like on the road one summer. Me and the drummer, my friend Steve, we like saw it and we freaked out. We were like, oh my God, there's an arrow in it. And now it's like every time I see that, I think of being a high schooler, like high in the van, and just being like, dude, the FedEx logo has an arrow in it. Yeah, man. No, exactly. And it's like now you can't unhear, like, oh yeah, that's Beatles and the Radiohead. Yeah,
well, it's not direct. It's not a direct thing, but it's like now you know. Now you notice it. Which is cool.
For sure. Man.
So, when you're creating stuff like this, do you ever create something for another artist and you're like, man, I wish that was mine?
Of course. Yeah. All the time. And that's kind of like. That's where that identity crisis, I think, was starting for me in LA, where it was like and the more people I talk to, man, it's like, it's such a common thing for artists. It's like we get influenced by things and then we're like, oh, I need to do that. But it's like, no.
Yeah.
You can be a fan of that and it will inevitably creep its way into your work in some way. Mm-hmm. But like, and again, I'm not discouraging evolution and change, but it's like if you're like really off and you can tell that, like, if it's not resonating with you ultimately, it's like just try to be aware of like when something's being forced, you know. No, absolutely. So actually, my wife is an artist and she's a incredible singer and singer-songwriter, and her debut album is going to be starting to come out this year, and I had the pleasure of co-writing it, and then I produced and mixed the whole thing as well.
Oh, cool.
And there's one song in particular on there that I'm just like so jealous of, even though like I co-wrote it and produce it. It's by far my favorite production of mine that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just, it's kind of this like, it's like Janet Jackson meets like Solange. Ooh. Meets like Erykah Badu. But it's like Jimmy Jam and Terry, bring it back to Minneapolis, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. It's like when they were working with Janet Jackson and they were working with her in Minneapolis. It kind of feels like that era of her career. And like, but when I hear it, I'm like, I wish that that was my song.
Yeah.
But I'm like, but it's my wife's song. So we'll take that. Like,
yeah.
It's still very much in the family, literally. So, but no, all the time there's all kinds of stuff that I work on where I'm just like, but that's when it's like, when you hear the artist like get on the mic and start like singing it, then it's like, that's why you're the artist today.
And yeah.
It's like, that's why this is your song. Cause it's like, I could never pull it off the way you do, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, there's, and so many people come to mind when I'm just like, I'm like, oh, we wrote such a cool song. And like, and it's never like a, it's just kind of that, it's like a, you're like so proud of it. Almost where you're, but then, and then that kind of, it's like, there's all these songs that like you hear and you go, oh my God, I wish I had written that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, if only I could write something that cool. But then it's like when you do it yourself, but then you're kind of like, God, I wish that was my song. Like,
right.
I love it so much. Yeah.
I could see how you could have an identity crisis.
Yeah. That, yeah. And it's, well, and that's just like, that's part of the journey too. And it's like, you know, all of it leads you to where you are. And actually, that's a nice segue to the next song I'm going to play. It's kind of all about like trusting that wherever you are in your journey, it's like you are where you need to be at all times.
I love that.
And so, yeah, without further ado, then I'll take it away. I'll get this one going. This one's called Desert Sun. And
right.
Yeah, I wrote this one out in Joshua Tree when I was turning 30 and just kind of kept singing Desert Sun this, Desert Sun that. And like the chords kind of felt deserty to me. And, but then what I realized is that basically what I wrote this about was like the twists and turns of chasing your dream and just like understanding that, you know, it's not going to look the way you have in mind, but that's okay. And like you are where you need to be. So the song's called Desert Sun.
Sun, don't take it all away from me. Save some space for me. I'm coming along. Desert sun, could you back it off a few degrees? I'll do anything you please, and then some. Yeah, I thought I could alter time and space, entertain the human race, and do it on my own. No matter where I thought that I should be, you took creative liberty and put me where I belong. It's where I belong, I'm where I belong. Where I belong, where I belong. Desert sun, could you shed a little certainty? You got me on my knees, singing along. Desert sun, you could leave me here with not a thing. Teach me everything all at once. Yeah, I thought I could alter time and space, entertain the human race, and do it on my own. No matter where I thought that I should be, you took creative liberty and put me where I belong. It's where I belong, I'm where I belong. You destroy everything and throw away the key. I'll count it as a loss. Yeah, ooh, I'm trying not to fear your heat. Accepting what I see is where I belong. It's where I belong. I'm where I belong. Where I belong, it's where I belong, where I belong, I'm where I belong, where I belong.
God damn, man. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, comes in here. Oh, my voice might not be so good.
Well, it
doesn't
so,
miss a note.
It's so thrashed.
I get
Look at
it.
I'm cracking when I'm talking.
I know.
But,
it's
that went well.
That went well, man. It sounds so good.
Thank you.
Well, you're not going to believe this, but we're coming up at the end of our hour.
It's
already.
Great. Yeah.
It flies by, right?
It does.
Yeah. So where can people find you and follow you in all the places?
So Verskotze is, and I'm assuming you can put links to the episode, but yeah, Verskotze is Verskotzi, and that's just the handle on all my social media is just simply Verskotze. And yeah, if anyone wants to hit me up or has any questions too, like Verskotze@gmail.com is my email. You can hit me up. And and then Shiring, the album, is out now. It's titled Shiring, and Shiring is my mantra that I use when I meditate. We didn't really get into that, but basically a quick snapshot, I decided to get sober 3.5 years ago, and that decision directly led to me finding and exploring meditation. And then in that research, I found my mantra, and that word, like as a single word, will just always to me represent my new path to personal enlightenment, and like that dedication to myself to like call myself, you know, higher than where I was, and to find my, you know, my best self with a capital S, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Shiring is out now, and it's a journey, and I hope that you can, you know, listen to it from start to finish, and hit me up and let me know your thoughts, because I love hearing what it means to people. And thank you, Grant, for having me on today, man. It means a lot to come over here and be back in the studio.
It comes full circle.
So right? Many memories. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thanks again so much, man. So, I really appreciate it. This was beautiful.
Cool.
Everyone, follow Verskotze, give Shiring a listen. Yes. It is a great, great album. You are going to enjoy it. Links will be in the show notes.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. I'm going to fade us away into the background.
Great.
Glad you're here. Like, follow, subscribe, all the things, you know, but don't worry about me.
You know what to do.
Yeah, you know the things. All right. See you later, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
There you have it, folks. My conversation with Joey Verskotze. Make sure you go and check out his music. What a cool dude. What a lot of fun to chat with him. And what a talented and just amazing individual. So one last time, just want to thank our sponsor for the show, Car Concierge, for making this happen, right? And tell you about what they do. They are going to help you if you need to shop for a new car and you don't have the time, right? And maybe you just, those past experiences with shady dealerships and salespeople just made you want to avoid starting the search for a new vehicle altogether. Okay, Car Concierge gets it, and that's why they exist. All right, they're gonna work directly with you to understand what you're looking for in your ideal vehicle, and then they'll take the search on for you, right? So it's gonna save you endless amounts of time and questions by working with Car Concierge, because they're gonna search, find, negotiate, and ultimately deliver your dream car directly to you without you having to step foot in a car dealership. So visit their website at gocarconcierge.com or call 612-662-7788 to get started today. And thank you for listening to Glad You're Here. New episodes every Wednesday. Like, subscribe, share, all of that type of stuff. You know what to do. I will see you next week with a new episode. Thank you. Bye.